How do you breathe? How do you rest? That's one of the things that we're going to be talking about today as we continue our series called Work Like a Boss. And we're glad you guys are here. My name's Robbie. And if you're just joining us, maybe for the first or second time, I just want to say thanks for being here. You are in a great place to wrestle with some of the big questions of life. We love doing that around here. We love doing that authentically. And we're going to kick our time off by singing some prayers together. And around here, we use music. Number one, we like music a lot, but we like it when we can connect it with the things that we're passionate about, with the things that we're growing in, and the things that we want to learn. And so we're going to start by saying, God, would you remind us who we are? And I realize that could be a stretch if you... If you're brand new, you're like, I'm not even sure I buy this yet, Robbie. I would just say, great. I'm glad you're here. And I would invite you to sing these lyrics as an experiment. And over the next 65 minutes that we're together, just wrestle with the implications of things that we're talking about. Is this true? And if this is true, then what does that mean for my life? Right? So why don't you guys stand up, and we're going to sing this chorus. It goes like this.
Tell me once again who I am to you, who I am to you. Tell me, 'cause I forget who I am to you, that I belong to you, yeah. Tell me once again who I am to you, who I am to you. Tell me, 'cause I forget who I am to you, that I belong to you.
My way, when I lose my way and I forget my name, remind me who I am. In the mirror, all I see is who I don't want to be. Remind me who I am. In the loneliest places, when I can't remember what grace.
Tell me once again who I am to you, who I am to you. Tell me, 'cause I forget who I am to you, that I belong to you, to you.
Past is all I see, and what it's made of me, remind me who I am. But I've chosen my own road just to find them on my own, remind me who I am. When I'm broken to pieces, would you show me what free?
Tell me once again who I am to you, who I am to you. Tell me, 'cause I forget who I am to you, that I belong to you, to you.
Sing, I'm the one.
Love. Tell me once again.
Desire for us, well within your ability. So we offer you the next 50 minutes and say, come meet us right where we are. Thanks, God. In Jesus' name we pray, amen. Well, guys, thanks so much for singing along. Why don't you just turn to some folks around you, say hey, and if you have some extra space between you and the stranger next to you, let's scoot in towards the middle and make some room for some of our late friends. Going on around here, and one of them is this program called Whiz Kids. I'd love for you to take a look at this video to hear more about it. Check it out.
Quality childhood education can change the course of a child's life. A kid who misses out on quality preschool is already behind by the time he hits kindergarten. Without help, that gap widens, and it's nearly impossible to catch up. If a child can't read by the end of third grade, he's four times more likely to drop out of school. And in areas of concentrated poverty, that kid is 17 times more likely to drop out. 30% of Cincinnati public school third graders are currently failing the state-mandated reading test. In other words, nearly one out of three of these kids is set up to fail. Children who beat these odds almost always succeed because of a relationship, because of a teacher or a mentor or a coach, because of someone who believes in them.
WizKids program means a lot of things. For self-esteem, it's a great positive influence. Academically, I hear the students, you know, they tell me, I can read better because my tutors help me. My mom signed me up for WizKids because I had a hard time getting my homework done. Now I do it.
My favorite thing about WizKids is the tutoring.
What I like about WizKids is drawing.
And?
Reading.
I just do better in school. I get great grades. I get to meet people every year new. And I have fun with Mr. Mike, and I like the people that's here.
I love WizKids because it supports our students, it supports our teachers, and it just, I see a universal benefit for everyone involved with the program.
She, at first, was very quiet and together, and now she's opening up more.
I definitely have seen changes in his self-esteem because when I first met him, he was kind of quiet, very reserved, and now he's just like my good bud, right?
I've watched Jerome start out from like a skinny little fourth grader that was a little shy about talking to me to somebody who towers over me now and has lost any semblance of shyness about talking to me about just about anything.
I think just seeing the kids grow and develop has been amazing. It's easy sometimes from week to week to not feel like you're making a difference, but to see, for example, Anthony learn his multiplication over the course of the year or really grow and mature as a young adult is just amazing.
Santinez was about a grade and a half behind. We were actually selling out words still and going through a word list. And now he is reading books, and we improved a lot. He's on pace for second grade, so we're really proud of him.
Just seeing the progress that they make and going up in grade levels, Muhammad's already gone up four or five just in this half a year.
I get phone calls on a regular basis from parents wanting to get their kids into the program, and we don't have enough tutors at this point, and that we have our demand is much higher than the supply, and I'd love to be able to reverse that trend a little bit.
It's 1 hour out of your week, and for me, it's just one of the most rewarding parts of my week.
You can read and write at about a second grade level. You can actually be a tutor, so it's just something where everything is there for you and ready to go, and you just walk in and just enjoy an hour with your student.
It means a normal person coming in and making a brighter day for a kid.
It really changed my life in learning. I take school very seriously and learn how to be respectful and learn about Jesus.
Come on. WizKids, right? I'll tell you what, I believe that WizKids is the long game of change in our city. And we have been investing, Crossroads has been investing in WizKids for a long time here at Oakley and up in Mason. And we're really excited that we are going to be opening up WizKids on the east side and down in Florence. So if you would like to find maybe the most amazing thing to do with an hour a week, would love for you to go to crossroads.net. And you could sign up for WizKids, or there's an information session today that you could be a part of. Would love to have you check that out. We have a lot of things going on. I just want to tell you about a couple of the big ones. One of them, those of you from Cincinnati, how many of you have a story that starts with, this one time at Bogart's? Anybody? Anybody care to admit it? Right on. a lot of stories are going to start changing because Crossroads is going to Bogart's tonight. Yes. Crossroads Clifton is opening up, and we're targeting towards college-age students, UC Xavier. So if you are a college student, not if you just like college students, but if you are a college student, we'd love to have you come down and check it out. Doors open at 6:50. We'll start at about 7 o'clock, and Brian's going to be down there. A lot of the music team is going to be down there, and we are going to take the best of the Bork Like a Boss series, but target it towards the college segment. And so we're really excited that more stories will start with, like, I remember this one time at Bogart's where I heard about God in a way that I could understand. So really excited about that. Yeah. Some other stuff going on around here. If you've been around here for a year or so, maybe you remember something called the All Church Journey. And the All Church Journey is a deal, for those of you who don't know, it's a deal where from Kids Club all the way up here to the weekend experience, we have one unison movement towards a certain aspect of learning or growth. And typically that happens in the fall, but we have a big fall coming up with Awaited, so we're retooling the journey, our resources and experiences, and that's going to happen in the spring. So where normally you would get into small groups and get to know one another and for about 8 weeks, we're going to do that now in the spring. So somebody else has got a busy fall too. So what that means, we do not want you to wait until the spring to get to know the people around you or other folks in the community. So we are launching community groups. And community groups are groups that meet for a short amount of time where you can find like-minded folks who want to learn the same thing you want to learn or grow in. So if you open your programs, there are a lot of the community groups, not all, but a lot of the community groups listed in the program. And you'll be amazed at how close you can become with some other folks just by walking the same direction as them as you're learning and growing. It's a beautiful thing. We have capacity for 2,000 plus folks, so there's room for almost all of you, but probably not the guy next to you. So just beat him to the sign up. Great.
there are a lot of things going on around here, and the way that we make that happen, the way that we see change happen in our community, our city, and the world around us is by being generous. And the Crossroads community is generous in a couple of ways. We pass bags around here, and we give gladly of our resources because it says, God, we trust you with what we have. We trust you that you're our provider. And so you can give with a check. If anybody here has a check, I would just like to meet you. And we also, all right, high fives. Get a smartphone. You can also give with a smartphone. We have a great, simple, fast app that you can just give like super easy. So while we are doing this offering, would love to showcase a brilliant and beautiful artist and entrepreneur who is working like a boss. Take a look at this.
My name is Emerson James, head mulch master of the Mulch Collective. A lot of times when you think of art, you might think of painting, drawing, sculpting, or dancing. Our craft is like all of this combined. We are storytellers. Our company is a nonprofit-based collaborative effort of small batch artisans. We want to help local artisans tell their story. We author a different tale for the broken and forlorn. Everything deserves a second chance. That's one of our sayings around here. It's more than just reclaimed or recycled, it's redeemed. Every piece of our handcrafted single barrel product is unique. It's special. No two pieces are alike. That's one of our sayings around here. I think one of the things that makes our product so unique is the aging process. We love providing our customers with a multi-sensory experience. The gestation process takes place in an oak barrel for 9 months. Some people say my work is shit. I say no. It's mulch.
Yes, yes. We're all trying to get artsy and everything and trying to make products that are beautiful and long-lasting, and that's wonderful, but at the same time, there's just something we're trying to reclaim about the beauty and value of work itself. I was thinking about this a couple weeks ago when in USA Today, I ran across an article where the future King of England, Prince William, got a part-time job as a search and rescue pilot for £40,000 a year. And you think, why would he do that? He doesn't need the money, but he does it because he needs to work. There's this spiritual need that we have. And inversely, today we're going to look at the other thing that we need. We need to rest for work to be powerful. We're going to talk today about resting like a boss. Let's pray before I go any further. God, you're good to give us moments like this. And I know this is a restful time for us because we're doing something different than we normally do. I pray that we would continue to rest today, but you would also restore us, at least restore to our minds an image of what a healthy life would look like that would lead to a more productive work life, but in the end, just means we want to be more like you and rest. Help me be clear, and thank you for our time. In your name I pray, Jesus. Amen. So, why would we rest like a boss? I mean, it seems like rest and work just doesn't go together. Shouldn't those be two entirely different series? Well, we looked at the beginning of our series, how God starts off in the Bible, in the book of Genesis, working. He works for six successive days. Work, 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 work. And then the seventh day, after Adam and Eve, after humans, you and I are created, after on the seventh day, the seventh period of time, it says this. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. So work is good because God is doing it. Work is good because Adam and Eve are about to do it before anything goes wrong in the world. And yet, they rest. They rest intentionally from their labors. Now, the main idea for today is this. Rest is an act of faith. Rest is an act of faith. Whenever you unplug or disengage from what you normally do to serve others or earn a living, it comes from an act of faith. And this need to rest is actually seen all through creation. It's hardwired through creation. We have here in the Midwest, we have winter, right? And winter time means no crops are growing time. It's forced rest on the land. This is why farmers know that the produce that's created in our fields here in the Midwest is far superior to the produce that's created and produced in the fields in California and other places. You would think, why would that be? There's chronic sunshine. You have perfect water that's controlled through irrigation. It's because we here have the forced rest of the land that goes into a deep freeze at winter. And that forced rest produces greater fruit. We also have, all of us, we have in creation forced rest for you and I that's called sleep. We're forced to sleep every day. It's interesting that I don't hear an atheistic evolutionist talking about why we need to sleep. I mean, you'd think that if we're evolving to higher, more productive life forms, we would have evolved out of sleep a long time ago. I mean, it's wasted, right? 8 hours, I'm on my back, on my stomach, I'm not learning anything, I'm not growing anything, I'm not killing anything, I'm not cultivating anything, I'm not at all. And yet, we can't get away from it because God has hardwired into all of us the need to rest. And one of the challenges that I have doing this message is that, actually every message is, there's some people who don't need to hear what I'm saying. And there's other people who do need to hear what I'm saying. And so, I know my temptation is to go, gosh, there's some people who are going to hear this go, yeah, that's I need to do some resting. And actually, no, you need to get your rear end gear and start working more. So you rest plenty. I know there's some in here who just, and especially going to be 11:45 service. I'm telling you right now, 11:45 service, I shouldn't even like give this message. I think I'm gonna seriously, half those losers show up 25. I got half those losers show up 25 minutes late. So we're going to change the message for that for those people. But I just have to trust that we're all going to hear and apply this the way it needs to be heard and applied, because there's some things that we're just not sure, like how long should a work week be? I mean, God doesn't say, thou shalt worketh 40 hours if. Doesn't say that. Is it 20 hours? Is it 40 hours? Is it 60 hours? I mean, what is it? We don't know. But one thing we do know, and we're very clear on, and that is that God wants us to rest. He mandates us to rest. And one of the basic forms of rest is to have one 24-hour period every 7 days where we are unproductive and disengaged from our normal work. It's in God's top 10 list, the 10 commandments. Here's what it says. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, holy to the Lord. And whoever does any work on the Sabbath day shall be put to death. It's a sign forever between me and the people of Israel that in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth. On the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. Yeah, you read that right. Will be put to death. Now, let's think about this here for a minute. I thought the Old Testament was like curmudgeon-y God that was always like cracking the whip and making everything hard, so hard that he says, yeah, if you don't rest, I will kill you. Yeah, he's a real curmudgeon-y God, isn't he? Wow, he's real difficult. Now, I don't think he's doing this any longer. There is one example in the Bible where this does happen in the Old Testament. I don't know how we apply that today, but I'm saying this. Just take this at face value and go, God is really, really intense and interested in this idea of rest. It's really, really important to him. Now, the interesting thing is God's rest is a bit different than ours. God works for 6 days. Seventh day, he rests. On the sixth day, you and I are created. Adam and Eve are created. Our first day is work. Our first day is rest. That's right. I misspoke the first time. Why? Because we're not human doings. We're human beings. You'd think like if God's created us, we're supposed to be productive, go, go, you say, okay, Adam and Eve, you're done. I need you to get going, make, while the hay is up, go, chop, whatever the saying is, go. No, the very first day, they are resting with God. And so, I've shared this before, it's worth looking at again. This is a picture of how creation operates and how our life is supposed to operate. There's two extremes. There's resting, and then there is working. And the key to having an effective life, one of the keys, is to understand how this pendulum swings back and forth. God rests from his work, but you and I have to be in a place where we rest to work, because our very first day was rest. And if we don't have an accurate, healthy relationship between rest and work, we're not going to be the people that God actually wants and enables us to be. We ran across this study. I'll share it with you. Here's what it says. The study combined the results of different studies over the last 50 years and found that spending too long in the office resulted in a 40 to 80% greater chance of heart disease compared to an 8-hour workday. The latest findings discovered by scientists at the Finnish Institute of Occupational Health support results from a 2011 British survey that revealed that doing more than 11 hours of work a day raised heart disease risks by 67%. Now, I don't know how all this translates to us. I know I work 40 hours a week. I'm not saying that we should all work 40 hours a week. I'm just saying evidence is there that if we do not value rest and we are always going, there are physical consequences to that that we will engage in. And we're seeing this in our work hours in the country. We think that our average work hours a week is 40 hours. In reality, we on average are working 47 hours a week, a day longer than we actually think. 4 in 10 workers work 50 hours or more in our country. 2 in 10 workers work 60 hours or more. We have a problem not only with our work ethic, as I mentioned the first week, doing the right things when we're at job, we have a problem with our rest ethic. Now, I'm going to give you a lot of points today. You can write them down, you assimilate them however you want. As I think about this, I thought, I'm trying to cram a lot of information here because I'm pretty confident you're not going to go anywhere else and learn how to rest. I don't think any motivational speaker, and I'm not one of them, is making any salt by telling people, hey, just relax. I mean, we're going to seminars to be more productive, to squeeze more time out of our day, to figure out how to do X, Y, Z. Very few of us are ever going to be in a learning environment where we're going to learn how to slow down. Very few of us. So let me tell you right now the incentives not to rest. Why would you not rest? Number one, lower paying jobs don't provide enough resources that requires another job. A lot of us in here, it's always hard to make ends meet. And it's not necessarily because we're mismanaging anything, but because the same job we're doing now that someone would have done 30 years ago is actually producing more food for them than it does us now or you now. And so more jobs have to happen, more work hours. A second reason why we are not resting is that higher level jobs, inversely, create higher incomes, which create longer weeks. Well documented, the income gap is widening, and it's actually hurting both people. Those on the lower income are being hurt because they're having to work more to hit basic needs, and those in the upper incomes who are having a lot of work, the basic understanding is you're getting paid so much, so we own you. When you go on vacation, we expect you to be plugged in. We expect you to always be able to produce, and you are owned. It's really weird here in our society. For all of human history, the more money you made, the more leisure time you could have. Think Downton Abbey. Any Downton Abbey fans we have in here? You know, what happens there? You have a lot of money, so you're hiring someone to do your butlering, whatever butlering means, or cooking, and actually putting your clothes and all that kind of stuff. You could afford that. Today, no, that's not the case. The more money you have, the more money you're earning, the more responsibility you have, the more expectations that are on you. If those aren't explicitly placed on you, we have this internal thing of, man, I'm making some jack, so I got to make sure I never disconnect. Number three reason why we are not resting is our jobs are very stimulating. If we're, laying bricks or something like that, at the end of the day, we go, "Ooh, man, I just did something awesome." And we feel good about it. Or if we're problem solving, we're a knowledge worker, we're doing creative things in the computer, we're doing all kinds of things that are very stimulating. And then we go home, we go, and now I'm going to watch Netflix, which is okay for an hour and a half or something like that. But then you're going, it's just not as stimulating as work is. We'll talk about that in just a moment. We have 38% of us, 38% of us check email at the dinner table because our family conversations, our conversations with friends or by ourselves isn't as stimulating as we think that it needs to be. And number four, we periodically and systematically to be unproductive is culturally taboo. It's just not cool to say, yeah, I did nothing today. It's just not good to say, yeah, I just decided to not come into work and use one of my vacation days. Why? Well, just because I wanted to. I mean, that's just taboo. You got to save those for when someone's dying or something like that. 80% of workers in 1976 took an annual week-long vacation. Today, it's only 56%. And it's not necessarily because our bosses are more stringent on time off. We're not taking it. 70% of all workers don't use all of their vacation time. And there is an average of 12 unused vacation days every year. And why is this? A part of everything I've just mentioned, but also it's sort of culturally taboo for us. Now, when I started looking at this and wrestling with this, how I realized that I have to do something different because I saw some signs of difficulty in my life. And the nation of Israel, the ancient folks, they didn't just take one day off every 7 days. They also had other celebrations. They would have these high holidays, these festivals. They were mandated. Everyone take off. We have to connect with each other, celebrate with another, and connect with God. And then they would also have this thing called Year of Jubilee. There was no evidence that they ever did it, but they were to periodically take off a year, everybody, and just rest. There's no evidence that they ever did this, but this was an instruction from God. And so when we think about resting, there's all different kinds of ways to enjoy Sabbath or have rest. I'll share you mine. First, I have weekly Sabbaths. That happens one day out of seven, where I just say for a 24-hour period of time, I need to not do what I normally do. I need to not be productive in what I'm normally productive in. Now, for me, that's a Friday. I work on Saturdays and Sundays, so those days are out for me, so it's Friday. Now, why do I choose Friday? In part, it's because of this idea of resting to work. I want my rest to be in front of my intense work. Many of us, we think we have to earn our rest. I have to work at the company so long to rest. And no, we have to rest to work. So what happens for me is I could take off Mondays, could be my Sabbath, but then what would that be like? I would just be recovering from being tired on Saturday and Sunday. And in reality, Saturday is always a coming. It's not Sundays a coming. It's Saturday and Sundays a coming for me. So I would be thinking, okay, what am I going to say on Saturday? How am I going to do that? So on Thursday, if I can get all my stuff pretty much done, if I can be 95% done with my message, so I put the final touches on Saturday morning, then Friday, I can rest. I'm like, okay, I got it in the box. And that means that I don't want to check email during that day. I do occasionally. I admit it. I am a sinner. I don't want to do that, though. I aspire not to do that. I'm not having phone conversations with people on strategic discussions. I'm not reading for message content. It's a weekly Sabbath. Monthly, I want to have a Sabbath. I want to have a Sabbath every month. And one of the ways I do that is 3 weekends out of 4 weekends is my goal to preach on the weekend. 3 out of 4 weekends. Now, when I don't preach, I've still got responsibilities in the office. But I'll tell you what, man, preaching on the weekend wears me slap out. There's times when I might have the energy to speak, I might have inspiration to, but out of the value of Sabbath and rest, I have to disconnect. And actually, it's good for everybody, right? I mean, you get to hear different perspectives. You get to be offended, not by me, but somebody else maybe. I mean, it's good for everybody. It is a grind to do the same thing all the time, and I need that monthly Sabbath. And then I have annual Sabbaths where I take off, as you know, around 6 weeks every year. I know some people are going, must be nice. It is nice, actually. It's very nice. So, thank you. I'm very appreciative of it. It's very, very nice. Thank you. Yes, it's a choice. It's a choice. It was actually a difficult choice that I've made. Let me give you the history of that and how I've organized that. In the early days of Crossroads, it was just all hands on deck all the time, and my hands were in everything, and there was very few staff members, mostly unpaid workers known as volunteers doing great stuff, and I was just like a one-armed paper hanger doing all the counseling, all the strategic thinking, all the preaching, all the managing. I was just going. And the difficult thing is, I knew that I had my core competency that had to be coming up where I had to preach. It was very, very difficult. I have a good friend of mine who you all know, Kirk Perry, who's spoken here a number of times. Kirk used to work at P&G, and then he went to Google. And last time he, which by the way, he's told me he's still going to speak here. He's going to come back and speak every once in a while. Isn't that awesome? Very cool guy. So anyway, every time he speaks, he says to me, he says, man, I don't know how you do it. I'm just worn out. I'm just dying. I don't know how you do it every week. And I said, well, Kirk, first of all, there is muscle mass you develop where you wouldn't be as tired as bad as you are if you did it every week. But for me, I said, the main thing for me is not the delivery of the content. The main thing is the preparation of the content. I mean, it's one thing to have a business presentation where you have to recap earnings and all that stuff. It's another thing every week you have to reformat what Crest is going to be. You have to have a new chemical composition for Crest every single week. It's the core thing. And for me, it's oppressive. Some dudes love it. The preparation part is hard for me. I wasn't a great student, and so it's not natural for me. So just getting into student mode every single week, researching and trying to have some, it's very, very stressful. So I would go away because I didn't have time to do all this study during the regular week because I was having a church to run and manage and lead. So the board said, go away, do your reading, get all boned up. And so I would go away and I would read all these books. And I always remember, like for 15 years ago, remember I used to come back and do what I learned in my summer study break. How many of us remember that? Anybody? A few of us remember that? Yeah. And part of why I would do that message is I wanted to justify that I actually was working. I would have a goal of reading a book a day, and I would come back and I would strap up all the books and I would have them all dog-eared and I would have them highlighted, and that would be my content that I would use for the next year. And then as CrossRoads started to grow, we got more unpaid workers, we got more paid workers that were doing things, I was able to specialize more, and I found that I could actually study during the week. And I also found that I still needed time away from my normal thing. So I stopped calling it a study break. I just call it break. That's as good. So I just call it break. Now, I'm reading, I'm still doing some planning, I am engaged here, but I found if I removed the word study break, which was telling me work the whole time, and if I removed the message I had to come back, give the week I came back that was what I learned in my summer study break, I could rest. Because if I had that message in my mind, I'd be thinking about it for 5 weeks. I'd be making that happen for five. Now, that was just me. Now, I'm not saying you can do this. I'm not saying that you should do this. I'm saying that you got to be different. I'm saying that rest is an act of faith, and if you want to be a person of faith, you're going to have to be different. And I mean in the area of rest. And there is amazing benefits that come to it. Now, if I just shared my little background on this, few benefits I've had. Number one, you have a hard time finding a pastor in the city that's been doing the same thing for 18 years. I'm the same post, hitting the same nail, week in, week out for 18 years. Number two, you have a hard time finding, well, thank you. I like being applauded for it, but honestly, it's not about me. It's about this principle just produces this. It does. Contentment. I am happy as a clam. Why are clams happy anyway? How do we know that they're clappy? They're happy. They're not smiling. Maybe they're happy clappy. They go like this or something. I don't understand. I never have fantasies about another job. I never like moonlight and do something else. Part of why I don't write a lot of books is like I don't have to have some other expression. I am very content doing my normal responsibilities. And the third thing is, I mean, I think I'm pretty productive. I think I'm pretty fruitful. I'm very proud of the things that God has done through you and I and this whole place. I think the productivity speaks for itself. And I'm saying, it's not because I'm unique, it's because rest works. It works. Now, how do you know if you're not resting enough? You're going, I'm not sure. Maybe I'm resting enough, maybe I'm not. Here you go. Number one, you can't identify an unproductive 24-hour period of time every week. If you can't identify that, you're not. You're breaking one of God's Ten Commandments. Thankfully, he's not killing people for this anymore, but I don't think he is. But actually, you are going to die earlier. I'll get into that in a little bit. Do you know the sacred 24-hour block of time where you're not being productive in your normal day job? And this goes for those of us who are stay-at-home parents. You got to find a place 24-hour where you're not folding laundry, where you're eating meals you've stored up or eating out or something like that. If you can't identify that, you're underrested. Number two, you can't identify a recent creative breakthrough idea. I mean, game changing. Oh my gosh, if I taught this content that way, oh my goodness. If we introduce this into the marketplace, oh my goodness. If I said this to my employee, so here's what happens. We get up in the normal course of the world, we come up to a wall and we go, and what we do is I gotta work harder, dig, I gotta dig deeper, push harder, work harder, work, and we don't go anywhere. There's no breakthrough. Because God has not orchestrated us to work harder for breakthroughs. He's orchestrated us to rest for breakthroughs. To rest for breakthroughs. Let's go back to our little diagram here. Every day, every week, moment of rest. Every day through sleep, basically a Sabbath. And what happens for us, our normal thing, our society wants us to be like this. Just working. Whee! Just like whee! It's just pegged the whole time. Wee, work, wee. And you know, it can't stay up that, it can't stay there. It can't stay there. And therefore, we're up against this thing. And so what happens is this. We go, rest time, rest. And then we have momentum to go have a breakthrough. That's the way it works. It's the way it works spiritually, and it's the way it works actually biologically. I always had this opinion that this was the way it was because I've experienced this in my life. Over and over and over again. My best ideas don't come in meetings. They come when I'm away from meetings. And if they do come in meetings, it's because I've just come off on rest. I've always thought that this was the way it was because in my own personal experience. And then I found out, no, biologically, this is reality. It's reality. I learned it when I was interacting with Keith Crutcher. You know Keith, he's spoken here a number of times. He's a resident scientific guru. I know, look at that beard. It's like he's got spare protractors in that beard. He's got like... He's got like a slide rule and good man. He's a neuroscientist. And we were talking about rest the last time he was here. We were interacting between services. And he said, yeah, you've got to shut the circuits down. I said, what do you mean shut the circuits down? He said, well, neurologically, when you're doing the same thing over and over, you're forming neural pathways, your synaptic connectors are firing, and your chemistry is going the same way all the time. There literally is a physiological rut in our thinking. And as that is happening, you're doing the same thing, you have to shut the circuits down, have them go, so that when they fire up again, they can form different connections, you can have different thoughts. He went on to say, when he ran the lab, he said, I think it was the National Institute of Health, the lab he was running. He said, the least productive people were the people who spent the most hours at the lab. Why? Because biologically, we need to shut down the circuits. So if you can't identify a breakthrough idea that's totally taking you to a new level, it's likely because you're not resting. Number three, you know you're not resting enough if there's a distance between you and those closest to you. There's strain. You're not connecting with one another. Number four, you're noticing signs of physical deterioration. This is what prompted me to get more intentional about monthly and annual Sabbaths. As I noticed signs of deterioration, I was gaining weight. My back was getting stiffer and tighter. I was having less energy. I went and got it checked out and found out my adrenal glands were fried. I was working hard enough and always in a state of that I was secreting adrenaline to just keep going through the day, and they were fried, and I had to take time to try to rebuild them. Are you gaining weight? Are you finding you're prematurely aging? Are you finding that you're stiffer? Are you it just could be a sign of not resting enough. And finally, you're noticing signs of emotional deterioration. Are you experiencing the wide bandwidth of what it means to be a human? Wide bandwidth of emotions. Are you laughing? Are you regularly laughing? Crying? Are you regularly crying? Or whatever your form of crying is, teary eyes or some such thing. Are you finding that you're being sensitive? Anger. Is there appropriate expressions of anger? Because when you're under-rested, we tend to go to our baseline emotional mode and we're angry all the time. Or anything, we just cry immediately. It's because we're just on edge or something else. If you're seeing these signs, then you're emotionally deteriorating. It could be because you're not restoring yourself or ourself through rest. Now, all that to say, how do we rest? Last 3 points. Most points I've ever given in a message. Last three. How do you rest? First is you identify with God. You choose that one to identify with God instead of anybody else in society that has a life that's run amok. I want to identify with God more than anybody else. What he says is what I want to do. It says that you and I are created in the image of God. And so guess what? If rest is good enough for God, then it should be good enough for me. I don't know if you caught this the first time I read it, but let's take a look at it again. Here's what it says. It's a sign forever between me and the people. So rest is not just about productivity. There's a spiritual sign here. It's a sign that we're a person of faith, a sign we're trying to identify with God. It's a sign that that in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. Now that's weird. I just got to say that I might even say that doesn't fit into my theology. I'm not sure exactly what that means. God is omnipotent. I don't picture God going, "Woo! Oh! Hold on. I got to catch a breather here. Woo! Oh, man, all you people here, I just couldn't answer your prayers because I'm too tired. Hold on. Woo! Oh, I am tired." I don't know what that means. I don't picture God gasping for breath. But yet, it says he was refreshed. Well, guess what? If God needs refreshed, who do you think that we don't need refreshed? I want to identify with God. That means I want all the goodness of God. This is awesome. We should be going, "You're kidding." It's amazing. This is a hard message for us. Like talking about some other moral choice might be difficult, but this one, this should be easy. It's like, "Oh, awesome. Wow." No, that's what God wants for us. If we want to be like God, we've got to identify with him. And part of this isn't just the big choices of saying, "All right, how am I going to take vacation this year?" It's actually the bigger choice of, "How am I going to actually get 8 hours of rest tonight?" I was reading the book, The Essentialist, and it's got a great quote, and it says this: "Having a week of sleeping just 4 or 5 hours a night actually induces an impairment equivalent to the blood alcohol level of 0.1%. Think about this. We would never say, "This person's a great worker. He's drunk all the time." Yet we continue to celebrate people who sacrifice sleep for work. This is one of those things where I just have to say science has the answers on this. The Bible doesn't tell us anywhere about how long we should sleep every night. The Bible says, "I believe it, that settles it." I'm totally content with leaning into science. All the time, actually. I don't see science in the Bible in contradiction at all, but especially into it when the Bible is silent on it, and the science is very, very clear. If you don't sleep 8 hours a night, you will die sooner. If you don't sleep 8 hours a night, you will be sick more during the year. You will have more diseases. You will be less creative. You will be less... It's scientifically factual. Now, there are very, very rare cases. Very, very rare. They're extremely rare. Just do the research on this. Simple application is get 8 hours of sleep tonight. Get 8 hours of sleep tonight. And for many of us, we can't do that because we don't have the faith to do that. Because we really think that if I took 8 hours, I don't know how I'd get everything done. Yeah, we're going to have a level of faith that God can get stuff done even when we're sleeping. We'll get to that in a moment. Number two, find a fulfilling alternative to work. Part of why we don't rest is... when we think rest, all we think is being inactive. We think rest and all we think of is watch more television. Well, maybe that's part of rest. But for a lot of us, that's not a fulfilling alternative to work. You have to find something that captures your imagination. When I first started grappling with Sabbath ideas and Sabbath teachings years and years ago, the people who were really hot on them were about a specific regimented kind of Sabbath. Well, here's what Sabbath is. It's this day, and you can do this, and you can't do that, which basically was you can do anything religious and difficult. You can't do anything that would be fun. That was basically the rules. You can't do any of those things. And I always struggle with that. I wrestle with that. How does that all fit together? And then I saw a verse in the New Testament that really had some interesting things to say. Jesus is with his disciples, and they're walking on the Sabbath, which people who were trying to tell me what you couldn't do, this was bad. You couldn't just take a walk through the park on the Sabbath. No, you got to stay at home and pray. So I was walking. Jesus is walking in the Sabbath, and then they're hungry, and so they pick some wheat, and Jesus rubs it in his hands like this, and the chaff, the part that's around the kernel of wheat, blows away, and he's popping wheat kernels. And the religious people pop out and go, aha! Aha! We knew you were unspiritual. You're breaking the laws of the Sabbath. What are you doing? And Jesus is going, ho, ho, ho. And Jesus kind of powers up on him a little bit. He said, let me tell you about the Son of Man himself. Let me tell you. I'm Lord of the Sabbath. In other words, he says, I'm God. I create the Sabbath. I'll do whatever freaking want to on the Sabbath. That's exactly what he says. I'm Lord of the Sabbath. And what that message says to me is this. We need to be less into what you can and can't do on your times of Sabbath, the more recognizing, is this restorative? Is this bringing you closer to God? Is this different from what you do the other part of the week? And so for me, now I'll lie on a couch fine and watch something. I'm not against that. But for me, that doesn't restore me as much as going camping with the family. It's work, you're setting stuff up, you're trying to gather firework, but it's stuff that I never do. My neurochemistry is going ways that it never goes. It's very restorative for me. And I got to make sure I get 8 hours of sleep. No matter how long I party around the fire at night, I got to get 8 hours of sleep or I will be hurting. And then, motorcycling for me. When I hit a deer a number of years ago going 80, and it was just it was a good thing I didn't get hurt, but it was a crazy miracle of God. After that, I got back on the bike, and I hated riding. I'd be riding down going, there's a bush, there's a deer behind there. I know it, he's gonna kill me. He's gonna jump out. And I'd see a tree and I would just picture like a deer standing up behind the tree going like this. And he's gonna jump out like a Far Side cartoon. And I honestly, I couldn't, it was hyper paranoid to ride. And I told a friend of mine, I said, I don't know if I can do this anymore. It's just not fun. All I'm being worried about is a deer jumping out in front of me. And I said, well, don't ride anymore. And I said, well, I might not. If this doesn't get fun again, I'm not going to ride anymore. But the problem is I can't cut this out until I find something else to replace it. Because this is restful for me. This is recuperative for me. What am I going to do? Just go watch more television? I have to find something to replace it. That's how intentional you have to be about work and about your play. You have to figure out what is fulfilling for you. And what's fulfilling for you might not be fulfilling for me. And then finally, number three, said it before, just drive it home. Step out in faith. Faith, rest is an act of faith. And what happens by an act of faith, there's clear instruction on the front end by God that we still don't know how it's going to happen, but if we do it on the back end, there's benefits. Same with other things, tithing. For those of us who tithe, you know this is exactly what it is. Clear instruction on the scriptures on the front end, like, oh, I don't, and you lean into it in the back and go, oh, wow. Those things are really true. I do feel X, Y, Z. Or clear instruction on anything in the Bible. This is very clear instruction, and it's an act of faith. What we're really telling God, if we can't rest, what we're really telling God is, I'm God. Not you, I'm God. Because you need me at the wheel 24/7. This was seed time and harvest. Even in times of harvest, the nation of Israel was to have a Sabbath. Think about that. Your income, the way you eat, is coming up out of the ground. It's on the vine right now. And you got to get it off the ground, off the vine before it rots or off the vine to market so you can make some money. But oh, bam, ding, Sabbath time. They would have to trust God and go back and trust that that was not going to rot and that they were going to be able to get it all done the next day. It's an act of faith. Rest is always an act of faith. I think we need to model this for other people. I encourage you. You're working with people in work environment, don't send out emails at 1 a.m. Don't try to impress people with how late it is. Save it and send it in the morning. Don't set an unrealistic bar. If you're a manager or you happen to manage people, don't put expectations on others that you might have for yourselves. Encourage people taking time off. I know it's rough. It's rough for me. I've got a staff here and it's like, oh man, are you taking vacation again? I think that internally, my flesh thinks that. My flesh does. But by faith, I have to encourage that and allow that. And you know what? It always works out, and the trains keep running on time. And God has his way. Why? Because rest is an act of faith. Now, we've been resting today, I think. It's been a dark room. It's
neural activity you're probably normally not doing. But I want to give you another exercise of rest. It's one you can use and set you up for more restful moments. So the band's going to come out in a moment, and we're going to go through an exercise, do a little song in prayer, and do some other things. Before we do, let's just pray right now, okay? God, thank you for, first of all, God, I shared this a couple weeks ago at the 11:45 service. It's crossed my mind that I'm just thankful that you've given me a job that I can rest in and I can be productive in and I love. I just thought about this time today. Just being with great people who are open and receptive is really a blessing. It's a benefit. So thank you for that. And as we go deeper in feeling restful, we ask you to hear the words of this song, which are our pleas from our hearts.
Slow me down, oh Lord, slow me down, and help my heart to hear your sound. Speak into my life, Lord, speak now. Slow me down, oh Lord, slow me down, slow me down, slow me down, oh Lord, slow me down, help my heart to hear your sound. Speak into my life, Lord, speak now. Down, oh Lord, slow me down.
Let's take our palms if you'd like to right now. It's a good exercise to do regularly, and I think it'd be good for us right now. Just take your palms and turn them upside down, palm facing down. It's the position of dropping things. So God, to rest, you want to drop at your feet right now our to-do list. We want to drop the stresses that we have. We want to drop the fixation with meeting a goal right now. We just want to drop and release those before you right now. Up right now in our lap, palms up. It's a universal sign of receive. Ask God to place something into our hands. And God, what I'm asking that you place into our hands right now is an image of rest. I know for a lot of us, it's just hard to even know, how do I rest? What would I do? And I pray that you give us those images. And I already mentioned a couple of mine, camping or riding a bike. I just see images coming on people's hands right now of taking a walk through a flower field, taking pipe cleaners and bending them into a zebra. I don't know, it sounds stupid to me, but for somebody else, that's probably recuperative. That's the wonderful thing. I know you have individual children here, and maybe for some right now, it's on a sailboat, lying in a hammock reading a novel, on our knees in prayer in front of a couch. God, help us to tap in with how we can rest and go there right now in our mind. Right now, participating in that restful activity. Just feel how good that is. Let's put our hands up in the universal sign of surrender. God, we want to surrender that by faith we want to rest appropriately. We want to honor you this way in the process of honoring you. We want to honor our own body, our own mind, our own spirits, our own emotions, our own friendships, our own families. We surrender. We want to do this next week, this next month, this next year. Let's sing that section of this song again out of prayer. Let's stand and do this together.
Teach me rest, oh Lord. Teach me rest and your unforced rhythms of grace, that I may bear fruit from this place. Teach me rest, oh Lord. Teach me rest. Teach me rest. Teach me rest, oh Lord. Teach me rest. And your unforced rest, oh grace, that I may bear place. Teach me rest, oh Lord. Teach me rest. Slow me down, slow me down, slow me down. Help my heart to hear your sound. Speak into
this just really quietly before we go sit in the traffic of the parking lot. All right, let's just do the voices.
Slow me down, oh Lord. Slow me down. Help my heart to hear your sound. Speak into my life, Lord, speak now. Slow me down, oh Lord, slow me down.
Great. Hey, have a great week resting to work.